The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Good afternoon, Trinidad and Tobago. Of course, we're switching gears. Let's talk to our psychologist here with the Children's Authority here in Trinidad and Tobago. She goes by the name of Krista Ali. Krista, good afternoon and welcome to Freedom 106.5.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much for having me.
Now, Krista, pardon me, Gil, I want to be able to refer to this conversation. So,
recording in progress.
We're going to do that a little bit. So, here's what's happening, right? We're having discussions with you this afternoon. Welcome to Freedom 106.5 FM. Let's first of all identify who you are, your position in the Children's Authority, and your profession.
As you said, my name is Krista Ali, and I am a clinical psychologist. I function as a psychologist at the Children's Authority of Trinidad and Tobago.
Now, when you say a psychologist, what's the difference between the two?
So a psychiatrist would have been somebody who went through medical training. They are a doctor, and then they specialize in the field of mental illness and psychiatry.
And psychology?
Yeah. So I am trained in psychology. I am trained in clinical psychology.
Let's define what clinical psychology is for our listening audience. So you go to work.
I deal with mental health issues. I am able to diagnose mental health conditions, psychological distress, and treat it through a process called psychotherapy.
Interesting. You know, I would have done some research on it, but I prefer you explain, because that kind of study, you know, it's a little ticklish, boy. You know, for you to watch somebody and say, listen, you're off your bananas there, you know.
I definitely don't just look at somebody and make a comment like that.
But there's a process that goes through the study of human behavior. A bit of sociology is involved in there as well, right?
So I have a degree in sociology as well, yeah.
Well, you read the big, thick book and write all the essays and all of that. I attempted it too, I went through it A-level, it was not for Davy Murray. So welcome to Freedom 106.5 FM, we make light of the conversations. So let's start talking in terms of, you know, we're dealing with children here. How to detect children, for one instance, online grooming. Now people wonder, what is online grooming? Online grooming, as far as we know in layman's term, is somebody on the other end of your child's electronic device and soliciting your child or your children to do things that are outside of the ordinary. Am I wrong or right? Am I on the right track?
So you're on the right track, but this is really part of a wider topic or theme that we call sexual grooming. So online grooming would be just a facet of that or one aspect of it. But what the public needs to understand is that that's not the only way that sexual grooming can occur. So what I'll start off by saying is, what exactly is sexual grooming? And this is essentially when an older person, it could actually be a child, so an older child or an adult gets into a relationship or builds a relationship with a child with the end goal of entering into a sexual abusive relationship with that child, a sexually abusive relationship with that child.
You know, I often wonder, how as adults we can find ourselves attracted to the innocence of young children who look up to us as trusted individuals. I say that to uncles who harass and interfere with their young nieces. You know, I remember looking at my niece when she was growing up. She's 23 or 24 now. But she would come and she'd be like, Uncle Davy, you know, Uncle Davy, I heard you on radio. That's my uncle, and you know, my uncle is working on radio. And, you know, I am looking at her coming from primary school. And this is such innocent child, you know. And I'm thinking, she's so happy to see her uncle. And then I think in the school she was attending, there was in Aruka there, there was a child who was, we thought she was an introvert, all right? Mm-hmm. Not recognizing she was harboring some kind of thing that was happening to her. So we were forced now, my sister and her husband were now forced to edify my young niece about the dangers of being out there. And this young lady was going to an all-girls school. So the parents were thinking, you know, that can't happen. It's only girls in here. All the teachers are female, most of them, so your child fairly safe. And they're not recognizing that the danger lurks within the family circle sometimes, you know. So my question to you this afternoon is, how do we identify when these things are happening? What are some of the signs that we need to look for in children to be able to detect sexual grooming or grooming of any type?
So, you know, you actually hit on a whole lot of different points there, right? The first one that I want to start with is the fact that, you know, you were speaking about that adults like that should be trusted. And that's really a huge part of sexual grooming, where the person is usually somebody that this child looks up to, and that person is in a position of trust with that child. So essentially, the playing field is unbalanced. One person holds all of the power, and that is the perpetrator, or the person who is going to be conducting or doing the abuse. And then the child, who has no power in that situation and is really a victim. So that's one huge part of it. Another part of what you mentioned there, you know, in terms of that this child was in an all-girls school. And one thing that I really want to make everybody very much aware of is that these type of things are not, it's not just specific to one gender, to one sex or age. We have boys that are being sexually groomed. We have girls that are being sexually groomed. And quite often the perpetrators, you know, it's either male or female.
You know, the thing about it is that scares me is being able to identify it. Now, you covered the factors in terms of age. So it doesn't matter the age. So let me ask you, what age can we say children, for example, can be susceptible to this type of behavior from adult individuals?
Any age. Because like I was saying earlier, it doesn't only have to be something that is done online. Right. So, you know, in terms of online sexual grooming, we might find that with any child who might have access to a cell phone and social media and such. So grooming can also occur in person. It can occur with people who are around your child. So I wouldn't say that there's any stipulated age when this can begin occurring. Right. In terms of signs for us to start looking out for, you know, we can look at it from two ways. We can look at it from the position of your child. I always tell parents that you are the expert in your child, and you are likely to notice when something is changing. You're likely to notice when that child is behaving in a different way. Some of the very common signs and red flags almost that we see with children who might be grooming is that they are very much preoccupied with that device. They're always on their phone. They might be looking at their phone and giggling a little bit. And then too, they start being very secretive with their behavior. They're spending a whole lot of time inside of their bedroom. They're not coming out as much. They're not interacting and engaging with family members who they might have engaged with before. They're not doing the activities that they were doing before because they're so preoccupied spending so much time on this device. That's a major thing to look out for. Another thing that we have to be mindful of with sexual grooming is that your child ends up showing up with gifts and different little things that you did not buy for them, and they can't really account for where they got it. Now, why this happens is because a huge part of sexual grooming and the process of sexual grooming is getting the favor of this child through items, almost sort of buying their trust, buying their confidence, and, you know, developing a relationship with them through giving them material items. That's one aspect of it. A lot of times, children who are targeted as victims for this type of abuse, it's oftentimes because they are lacking the emotional and the closeness and that type of relationship with their parents, with their family members, with their caregivers. So there's a need in that child to, you know, have that sort of comfort with somebody. And these perpetrators oftentimes look for that in their potential victims and then fill almost a space in their life that was not being fulfilled by the other people in their life.
You know, it's very funny that you mentioned devices. One of the things that parents do, they allow these devices to babysit children.
Yeah.
So I need to get some me time. I need to get some me time. Go on your tablet. Or you're allowed to use my cell phone. And they're not recognizing that the windows are out there, literally. It's the internet. And once your child have access to the internet on those devices. You know, I discovered recently, as early as this morning, before I came in, that there's a game that I know about. My children play it. I have a 13-year-old and an 11-year-old, and they play this game called Roadblocks. Roblox. R-O-B-L-O-X. Roblox.
Yes.
Right. Roblox. Right. They play this game. And I am being told this morning that they have an avatar. And they can speak to other people on this system. Now, the little one always come in and sell out the big brother. His little brother always come, Daddy, so-and-so, he's speaking to somebody. And I'd be like, do not speak to anybody on the internet. Let me see. And I'm now being told by a neighbor, one of these neighbors in the community, that their child, avatar, was kissing another child, or some other avatar. And I'm like, how you know that? why is this? So I now have to go home later and delete all them Roblox accounts. Because I am now, the woman showed me the tablet and she's like, hey, you see, no, this is my iPad here, right? They ban, but I forget to change the password. So every minute I come and I see Roblox on my things, I delete it. But they have their own tablets that we just take away and put away from time to time. My thing about it is this, as a parent, how do we control our children in dealing with electronic devices, monitoring it, in the same breath, allowing them to express themselves and, explore these things? How do we mitigate between the two? What's your advice?
So, it's really an ongoing process. There are definitely pros and advantages of children having access to these devices in terms of getting homework done, doing research, and of course, using it to play games that are allowed, things that, but it's definitely that a lot of monitoring needs to be happening and a lot of edifying yourself. You see, you learned something this morning where on Roblox you're able to talk to other people, and I feel like that's something that not a lot of people know about. You can actually, there's a chat function on that app or that game where you can speak with other people. The thing is, perpetrators oftentimes use these type of forum to target your child, and this is what adults need to be aware of. So it's not about going home and deleting the app and taking the device from your child. It's about learning more about it. It's about having a conversation with your child about the dangers of it. It's supervising them when they are on these devices, and it's about learning what techniques can be used to prevent them from accessing material and websites and spaces that they should not be on. So parents also need to take a little bit of responsibility in terms of learning about what can be done, learning about the different functions and settings on the device that can prevent them from going onto these different sites. The thing is, younger generations, that we're finding that they're very, very tech savvy. A lot of the things that we don't know how to do, they somehow just know how to do. So it's also about supervising and monitoring. It's about being an active parent. And this is the message that we want to put out there, is that you need to be more involved in your child's life so that there is no need for them to be going outside and speaking to strangers to gain emotional support and feel like they have somebody to talk to. It's about having conversations with them at home and, building positive relationships with them so that they too feel comfortable coming to you if there is an issue.
I have a phone call coming through. Let's take this call. Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Samari and guest here. Without calling any name, I remember 3 years ago, an influential person in the construction industry was charged with sexual grooming the 14-year-old daughter of an employee. What became of that matter? That was about 3 years ago. You had both said you wanted to be in court. I haven't any single thing about it since then. Like I said, that was about 3 years ago.
All right. Thank you very much for the update, for mentioning it. I'm not surprised that we hear nothing. It's like, anybody hear anything since the man get held, was held for Amira's death? We don't know. So he lock up. I guess he's in the hospital, right? Psychiatric hospital. So it's the same thing. What I want to find out is who a parent can contact if they detect that their child is being sexually groomed or groomed on a whole. Who can they reach out to?
So
How do they treat with it?
Yeah, they can definitely reach out to the Children's Authority and make a report for something like that. And we can be accessed at 996 or 800-2014. Those are our hotline numbers that are toll-free and 24/7. They can also reach out to the TTPS or the Child Protection Unit arm of the Trinidad and Tobago Police Service and make that report as well. You know, sometimes you might just have a concern about it, or you might just be trying to get some more information on it. And that can also be accessed through the Children's Authority.
You know, one of the things I wanted to look at as well is when they talk about sexual or grooming on a whole, right? We're talking about grooming. Can you identify or go into greater detail explanation as to, for example, what does the perpetrator do in the process of supposedly grooming a child and the different avenues? We know sexual grooming is one aspect. What other aspects are there that we can share with the public this afternoon?
No, so okay, we're talking about grooming, but we have to remember that the whole definition of this is that it's building a relationship with a child for the purpose of sexually abusing them. So the term really is sexual grooming, and that is usually the end goal, right? We don't oftentimes see any sort of other end goal for that perpetrator in this type of situation. So it's really a process. And it's a lengthy process usually that involves multiple people. It might not only be with your child. Sometimes adults and parents can also become a part of it. So firstly, yeah. So let me explain.
Let me explain the
process, right? And it's really a long process. So essentially, a victim is targeted. A child is targeted by the person or the perpetrator, the sexual groomer. The next step is that they gain the trust of that child by developing a relationship with that child. It's building rapport with that child, and it's really about targeting whatever needs they find that child is lacking. Now, sometimes that can mean that they need emotional support, they need a friend who they want to talk to, or it can be material things that they are lacking. So they start buying gifts for that child. They start paying a whole lot of attention to them. And by building that relationship and forming an emotional connection, your child essentially sees this person as their go-to person for anything that they need. Now, it's very, very innocuous at first. It doesn't involve anything that seems scary. It doesn't involve anything violent. It's a very friendly process. This is my friend. This person loves me. And that's oftentimes what this person says to that child. I love you more than your parents do. Look at all of the things that I do for you. Or I love you more than your friends do. I'm always here for you, right? The next thing is that they start testing boundaries in very small ways. It might be a touch on the shoulder. It might be exposing your child to some sort of sexual material, such as pornography, maybe starting off with some pictures. It's about teaching that child, and that's what the grooming is about, right? It's a slow process of testing boundaries and showing them things a little bit at a time, or testing physical boundaries a little bit at a time, letting them know that, hey, you can give me a hug, or you can sit on my lap because I bought you this present, or I'm your friend, I love you. We can hug, we can do certain things. Depending on the age of that child, this might be the first time that they're being exposed to this type of thing, so, you know, any sort of sexual material, so that there's no red flag to them that something is amiss. So actually, another red flag that parents can look out for with their children is them talking about different sexual things that at their age they really should not be knowing about. And that's a red flag to sort of go in and talk to your child to see what's going on. The next part of the process, after slowly showing them the different material, or, you know, slowly testing boundaries, is actually engaging in sexual acts with that child. So at this point, there's really a change in that relationship. The child might enter into a sexual relationship with this person. They might be feeling guilty for leaving the relationship because this person is my friend. Therefore, whatever they're doing to me or whatever they're asking me to do, it's probably all right because we're friends and this person loves me. After that, there might be a bit of manipulation, there might be severe control, and there might be some threats. Where you tell that child, this is a secret between you and I, and if you tell anybody about it, they're not going to understand. And I might get into trouble, or you might get into trouble, or I might hurt your family, or things like that. So after getting the child into that sexual relationship, there's a whole lot of coercion, there's a lot of manipulation, and there's a whole lot of control to keep that child in that relationship. It's also a whole lot of isolation, where you find that this person oftentimes does a lot of manipulating to get your child in that isolated space. And this is why I say that oftentimes in these situations, adults also play a role, because this person might actually be your friend. This person can be a new friend, somebody who just popped up and is now, sharing a relationship with you, sharing a relationship with the family, and then in very small ways, seeking to isolate your child by offering to give them drops to different places, offering to take them to school, offering to take them on outings, do different things, almost to make your life easier, but with the goal and the intention of isolating your child to further build the relationship and then further test boundaries and then sexually abuse your child. And that is the process of sexual grooming in a nutshell.
Do parents sexually groom their own children?
I don't doubt that also happens. Yeah, that definitely happens.
It's something they had to catch myself now, I tell my sons all the time, right? I have two sons. So if he does well, I say, listen, I am daddy. I can hug you and give you a kiss. And my little buddies be like, daddy, no. I be like, boy, I's your father. Boy, come and get daddy a kiss. You do so well in school today. He's be like, daddy, no. I say, so I call him a day. I say, tell me why I can't give my son a hug and a kiss. You's my boy. What happened to that? I say, I don't want no uncle hugging you, no neighbor, no friend, no cousin. Went down the whole list. But I's daddy. I could get out and get you on your cheek. What's the problem? He'd be like, daddy, that's just weird. So I'm like, now he's 10, he's almost 11. So I'm like, so how is that weird? I just laughing. This is me having a conversation and laughing. Yeah. And I'm saying to myself, but I'm very proud of him because, he understands boundaries and he knows, okay, daddy, you're kissing me. Get my bongs, daddy. Now, he big brother, he come and hug me up, daddy. Good night. And all right, I can get big brother. I can go later. You understand? It's a cool scene, and you better understand. Yeah. But the little one, oh my goodness. Let's take a call. Hello, good afternoon.
Davey.
Good afternoon.
How are you doing, man?
I'm good. What's your question?
Good evening to you. Yes, very enlightening program.
Yes, indeed so.
Yes, man. And you see, if there's a stigma with boys, they have this little, shyness and little thing going on in their head now,
Mm-hmm.
And things like that. But, They're mature over it, and things like that. But very interesting program, and this country, everyone, this country needs a real soul searching effort to get back to reality. Thank
you very much. So one texter sent me a message. My child used to hide from me. She is 13, almost 14. She used to hide from me. Now of late, I find that she is very much exposing. So she would come out of the bathroom and she would, she used to be hiding. Now she no longer does that. Could I think anything into this?
So I'm assuming that this person is saying that the child used to physically hide in terms of their body and that now they are exposing themselves.
Yes, definitely in secondary school now.
Like that. Now, the thing is, right, what I don't want to do is have people just thinking about one incident or one thing and thinking the worst, right? Just like how, you started questioning yourself there in terms of with your son. I don't want persons to feel like jump into the worst conclusion. What I will say in a situation like that is definitely have a conversation with your daughter about why that is happening, because feeling now that she can expose herself to you, that can be a red flag for something. I can't say exactly what, because a conversation would need to take place with that child to understand exactly what, but definitely a shift in behavior like that is a cause for concern. It is, you know, something that a conversation should be had regarding.
That's very interesting, because I know reading it in a group chat, could have listened and they pulled back the message. You know, the thing about it is, I want to encourage persons, don't do that. If you're asking a question, you ask your question. You know, you remain anonymous. I'm not going to say who you are, but ask your question. Yeah. And your question, I think, is very valid. Because if your child is 14 years and is now going into form two or whatever it is, from form one, she's in form one, and she's about to go in form two come September, and you say she was always hiding, and now she isn't anymore. She comes out the bathroom, she's normal, you know. She's developed, as you said. So she's wondering, listening to this conversation, if something happened or is happening that should be a cause for concern, you know. And
yeah.
And I'm thinking that's a very, very good, you know, thing to be. Somebody's now said, good afternoon, they're enjoying this conversation. Another texter says, how do I identify sexual grooming? Okay, maybe as you explained it earlier, they probably heard about it and they understand, you know. The thing about it is, what avenues do you think parents can be on the lookout for grooming? What avenues do you think they can be exposed to?
So before I get into that, I just wanted to make a point there, where you said that the person deleted the message. You know, we really want parents to understand that it's okay to ask questions and to ask for assistance. There are no stupid questions when it comes to your children. And also, there is no shame in reaching out and asking for help, because that is the only way that we're going to, you know, start benefiting our children and becoming better parents. Right? So I just wanted to mention that there's really no shame in asking.
I agree.
Right?
400.
The thing is, with that child, it doesn't really have to mean that something negative is happening. I don't know if perhaps she just now has better self-esteem and feels good about her body and herself. We don't know what it is. And perhaps we just need to have a conversation with her about having more boundaries. That can also be, you know, an avenue of what happened there, right? So it doesn't really have to be something very, very negative. So just talking, and this is why I'm saying having that open conversation with your children from a young age is very important. In terms of avenues, so we definitely know that, you know, online sexual grooming is a huge thing. It's part of, you know, the culture now and our society to be on the phone all the time. So we want parents to be mindful of who their children are speaking to and, you know, what's going on. Who are their friends? Who are they in contact with? The other avenue is definitely that. Who are they in contact with in person? We have children who are out there, they're in different things. They're in school, they have persons taking them to school, they might be engaged in extracurricular activities. We want parents to be mindful of who is around your child and who are they spending time with. I mentioned earlier about persons in a position of trust. Any person in a position of trust is essentially somebody who has control of your child when you are not with them. So when they're in the classroom, the parent, the teacher is in a position of trust. Principal is in a position of trust. Persons in the church and other religious institutions, they are in a position of trust, because essentially these are persons that you should feel like you can trust your child with. So it's about looking out for changes in that person's behavior, because like I was saying, they will find opportunities to isolate your child. They might be building a relationship with you in order to isolate the child. And then who are they talking about often? Right? And you know, it's really being mindful. I remember my younger sister often telling me about this one particular person. And I'm like, why is she always talking about this person like that? And it made me feel very uncomfortable. And then so I had a conversation with her about that person. And that's the thing. It's just about being mindful. That's when she now started secondary school. She was exposed to different and new people. And I found it weird that my 11 or 12-year-old little sister is talking about this grown person. So I started asking some questions. And that's what we need to do.
Very interesting. I like the fact that you took a very proactive approach. More often than not, we react to situations rather than try. Because you know why? We think that sexual conversations is taboo. You know,
yes.
We should not talk. Sex is a dirty word. I tell my children it's not. It is not a dirty word. It's what you, the engagement of sex is a beautiful act between husband and wife, etc., etc., between two persons, two consenting adults, right? And we, I think parents need to move away from that taboo back in the 80s and early 90s when parents were afraid. There's too much information out there to tell you how to deal with your children. And one advice I always tell my listeners, give children age-appropriate information. Don't try to talk to your 11-year-old and your 9-year-old about superficially gross things in sex. Try and give them age-appropriate information and taper your information to suit your child, to suit a child, not just yours, but a child. That they will understand.
So that conversation needs to start from the time your child is ready to go out of the house. To if it's daycare, if it's kindergarten, the information you need to start giving them there, and that needs to start with understanding what are their private parts,
right?
What does that mean, and what to do if somebody tries to touch them there. Now, I know that we often used to talk about good touch and bad touch. I still very much hear people talking about that, but what the information that I want to put out there is that we now call it an okay touch and a not okay touch. Because the term bad touch gives the impression that this touch is going to feel bad, when in reality, it does not have to feel bad. It might actually feel good.
True. Well said.
So we don't want to confuse children into thinking that something is only negative if it felt bad, or if it hurts, or if it negatively affected me. What they need to understand is that there are certain touches that are okay from certain people, and then there are certain touches that are not okay from certain people on certain parts of my body.
You know, one of the things, I was having a conversation with my young sons recently, just before, I think last term, I was talking to them about an incident. And the thing about it is, we often talk to our children about touches to them. Don't let anybody touch your hair. Don't let anybody touch your dear. But you know, very rare we tell our children, you don't touch somebody as well. We are so cognizant of protecting our child that we negate to tell them. We totally obliviate the fact that, you know, while I'm embracing my children to appreciate what is a, as we used to call it long time, good touch or okay touch and not okay touch, we need to also let them know it's also not okay for you to touch somebody else. It's also
or to
not
be asked
okay
to touch somebody else. And that is a part of, of grooming. And that is a part of sexual abuse. That's a huge part of sexual abuse and sexual grooming, that you are correct. We often tend to overlook. So it's not, it's really not just about what's being done to my body. It's what I'm being asked to do to somebody else.
And that is so true. That is so true. But I like the fact that it's not no longer a good touch and a bad touch, but an okay touch and a not so okay touch. You know, we need to explain
not
these
not
things.
So okay. Not,
not okay.
Touch.
So it's a...
Because there's nothing like a not so
okay. A not
okay
so okay.
Touch.
Okay.
That's given a gray area and there is no gray area.
Well said. Well said. So we're no longer talking to our children about good touch, bad touch. We are talking to them about an okay touch and a not okay touch.
Okay touch.
So that's not a not... That's a not okay touch. That's a no-no. But we also... I like the fact that, you know, the Children's Authority has, you know, chosen to really go this direction with the narrative, because as you mentioned, bad touch gives the illusion that it will hurt or it will feel bad when it can actually feel good. But we need to let you know that it's not okay at this age. It's not okay for this people, as you, and I like the fact that you mentioned certain people. So, you know, you're really edifying your children and preparing them. It's like building a house. You ever see people building a house and they build a room, but then they leave the wrought iron sticking out because they plan to extend the platform, so you know you have something to grip. So you leave your conversation somewhat of a cliffhanger where it's open to further explanation as you grow older, as you grow older, you know, and we move away from the taboo of the conversation that needs to be had, because make no mistake about it, people use public, you know, your children going to school, you walk into the bathrooms of some of these secondary schools and you see the graffiti on the walls. Right in Port of Spain, you might walk into a food establishment, and when you go into the toilet, you're seeing things on the wall, you know, privates drawn up and numbers, and if you want a good time, call this number. One parent is now messaging me. I'm looking at it here. I found my child's cell phone and a number was called. I noticed the number was called twice. Three times. When I called the number, a gentleman answered and hung up. And since then, I've been unable to contact the number. What should I do? Well, I'll leave you to answer that, Miss Christy Alley.
Krista.
Not watching your name yet.
Yeah, so definitely do a little bit of investigation. Where did that number come from? Is there a WhatsApp profile? Is there a photo? But of course, have a conversation with your child about, you know, who called that number, where they got that number from. So the first step is always having a conversation with your child about it, because we don't know where that number came from or what was the circumstances. Of course, I don't have all the details of that to better understand, you know, the age of the child that it happened with, but definitely have a conversation with your child. The thing is, parents are supposed to be routinely monitoring their children's phone, right? You cannot give a phone to a child, you know, with free access and have them feel like, you know, this is mine and I can have all the privacy in the world. We need to remember that children are they're called children for a reason.
Right.
They are adults and they're not in a position to make decisions like adults for various reasons, including the fact that, you know, developmentally, they're not at the level of an adult to make proper decisions or to make certain decisions. This is why they need guidance. And you as a parent and guardian are the person to guide them. Come, you know, giving them a phone or giving them a device comes with certain responsibility. And this is what I always tell to parents, to tell a child, I'm giving you this device as a loan, right? It still belongs to me, and there are conditions under which you can keep and continue accessing that device. If the rules and the boundaries are broken, it's going to be taken. And that also teaches your child very good, you know, important information about life in general, that there's rules and boundaries in life. There's certain things you cannot do in the workplace. There's certain things that's against the law, and that's why we don't do it. So even if your child purchases a phone or device on their own, it needs to have rules and conditions. And you as a parent, you need to be routinely monitoring. You know, it's good that that person found that number, a strange number on your child's phone. Do some more digging, get some more information, have a conversation and find out who that person is.
Indeed so. I am thinking off the top of the cuff here is that they must have seen it in a bathroom and curious about it. Now, here's the next thing about it as we are getting set to wrap the conversation. When it comes to grooming, online grooming, does it only relate to children, or can adults be susceptible to this type of behavior from others as well?
In terms of it being a crime, it would be children.
Okay.
But, you know, I'm assuming that, you know, anybody can be a victim of online grooming, and persons who might be feeding you false information to develop a relationship with you. But, you know, when we look at sexual grooming, it's really, we're talking about a child being the victim and the perpetrator being an older child
or an adult.
And I want to make that very clear out there. Older children can sexually groom younger children. That's something that we see quite often.
But then
it's something that happens. It happens, you know, with relatives, with non-relatives. And I want us to always remember that let's not leave our boys out of this conversation, because our boys and our boy children, they can be victims of sexual grooming online or in person as well. So let's be mindful that, you know, this can happen with our boys as well.
I'm very happy that you mentioned that, because we all tend to think that when we hear sexual grooming of a child, we're thinking it's a girl child, it's my little daughter. And we fail to realize that our boy children in this modern time, they are also at risk of being sexually groomed by online predators. I mean, we're in an age where people are identifying as, you know, so we have to be very cognizant of how we train our children to identify these things. And even if, you know, one of the things I always say to parents, try your best to be an open book to your children. You are not your child's friend. Do not get those lines blurred. You are the parent. You are my sons and I, we are not friends. I am your dad. I am your parent. But I am good enough that I am the best person that you can come to.
Yes.
Myself, your mom, talk with us. We will never steer you wrong. We want to protect you. We want to make sure you live your best life. We want you to be protected. So ask any question. Talk to me. I just try my very best. And we try our very best as parents at home to really talk to our children, our two boys. You know, we don't have any daughters. I'm not looking for any, you know. I get a daughter-in-law or granddaughter sometime when they get older. But I good. You understand? But the thing about it is this. You know, we must be mindful that our boy children can be hurt as well.
Yes.
They can be manipulated. They can start to suffer with mental health based on what they are exposed to. Oftentimes, we look at certain artists, international, and when we look at their life story, we see the kind of things that they were exposed to in their early onset in their career that messes with them. You know, suicide thoughts and tendencies are very real. You know, one of my favorite actors from a comedy known as Everybody Loves Raymond. I'm sure you're familiar with that comedy. The twin boys and the girl, they were actually siblings in real life. All right. And one of the boys are dead today. He committed suicide, you know, coming off the show when the show wrapped after, 9, 10 seasons, you know. He was in showbiz since he was a toddler. Now, you know, he left his twin brother and his sister to carry on their lives in his absence, because he would have taken his life. We don't know what kind of trauma he would have suffered on the set, behind the scenes, with directors, persons, you know, adults exposed, and predators, they are lurking in the shadows. And as you say,
again, persons in positions
in of position trust. Persons in position of trust. You know, is there any more information you would like to dispense before we depart this conversation, Miss Lee? Miss Ali, sorry.
So I just want everybody to remember that child protection is everybody's business. If you see something, please say something. And if you suspect that a child is being abused, or if you know that a child is being abused or is a victim of abuse, please reach out to us on the numbers that I mentioned earlier. That's 996 or 800-2014, and make a report to us. And I just want everybody to remember that this can be done anonymously. You don't have to leave your name or number in case you're afraid of any blowback or anything coming back towards you. Mm-hmm. But please, if you see something and you know something is going on, please report it to us, because we can only intervene in spaces and cases where we know that something might be happening.
I have a question for you before we wrap, though. I want you to share some advice as to how parents should be able to, should approach their children, their teenage children, in terms of getting them to understand some of the danger that exposed. How would you advise a parent to put across this vital information that the child so needs to know?
So you see how you were talking about in terms of having conversations with your child? Those are the type of things that we need to be doing. But what I really wanted to say is that it's never too late, right? So even if you didn't have that type of relationship with your child before, now your child might be a teenager, please don't think that it's too late and I can't go in and have these kind of conversations with them now. Talking to them about real life situations is very important, and understanding that, you know, these are the real life dangers that are out there. But it's really going to be for that parent to kind of overcome any fear that they have, any sort of, you know, they feel a little bit embarrassed to have these kind of conversations. There's so many things out there. There's so many online tools that are out there to help us have these conversations, including things like YouTube videos, different information online. You know, YouTube is really a good resource for a whole lot of things, you know.
Really?
I'm sure that there are videos on there that they can look for that are age appropriate for their particular child or the circumstances of their child that they can use to share some information with them. But understanding the real world and the real life consequences of these things is very important, and helping them to understand the dangers that can come to them. We live in a society today, and we live in a country where picking up a newspaper or going through social media is almost traumatic, right? There's so much things out there that is scary and very traumatic, right? And your child is exposed to this in all sorts of spaces because they have access to, you know, they're watching the news, they have access to social media, they have the newspapers. So if we are allowing them to be exposed to these type of things, we also need to give them the information that they need to protect themselves out there. And online sexual grooming and sexual grooming in general is just one of those things that we need to be protecting them from. So practice how you're going to say it to your child. Look for different resources that you might want to use. Sit and start having that convo. It doesn't have to be all at once. It could be a process. you introduce different things, you start talking about more stuff, building that relationship with your child to get them to a space where you can have open discussions about stuff. That's where we want everybody to be, and it's not too late.
I am very happy, Ms. Krista Ali, to have you here with us this afternoon sharing this vital information, because I couldn't think of a better time to talk about these things. I most definitely will also, in the later part of the shift this afternoon, regurgitate some of the information that you would have dispensed here this afternoon for our afternoon drive time listeners who would have missed it. You know, so thank you so much, Ms. Krista Ali. Once again, just give those numbers for the Children Authority before you depart.
That's 996 and 800-2014. Those are our toll-free hotline numbers.
Ms. Krista Ali, thank you very much. Don't be a stranger to us here on Freedom 106.5 FM. Have yourself a great one. Bye-bye.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.